I list on my resume that I had worked as a community organizer. And maybe people wondered what the hell that is and did I really do that? Well, it's a strange story, but it's true. Not only that, but I was so successful in my job that I received a call from the government of Canada asking if it's okay that the Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Trudeau, come and visit me on his campaign stop in Toronto. No, really. I was 18 and had just returned from a four-month road trip across the U.S. when a friend said they were hiring people to work at the Black Creek Community Center. So I went down, filled out the application form, and sat in the common area for an interview. After a while, a girl called out my name, and I was shown into the office for my interview. I was greeted by Lenore Suddis, a woman in her 50s with gray hair, three chins, and she must have weighed in at 350 pounds. I would come to learn that as big as Lenore was, her heart was even bigger. There are only two women I have known that commanded my utmost love and respect, and Lenore was one. Instead of the standard job interview, Lenore dispensed with that nonsense and wanted to know who I was as a human being. We talked for over an hour, what I have done, where I've been, what I think about the world. Then she said, "You're hired." I was shocked. We didn't even talk about my work history or education, which I asked her if she wanted to know. She said no. She knows who I am, and that was all she needed. You see, I told Lenore what you should never confess to in a job interview, that I was a member of the Driftwood Gang, and that I was an OG, original gangster. Listen to my video, The Pathetic Foolishness of Being Nonviolent, that tells the story of how I was accepted into the Driftwood Gang. Lenore hired me in large part because of what they used to call my street cred. Now, this may sound like madness to the younger listeners used to having to run the gauntlet of modern-day human resources departments. But once upon a time, there were people that hired you on the basis of your character, not your phony resume. Lenore was a community activist, and she had applied for and received a Local Initiative Project grant, a LIP grant. This allowed her to hire four people to work in the projects to create a better community. My best friend, Brian Whitehead, was also hired, and our job title was Detached Street Worker / Community Liaison. Lenore also hired two women, Darlene Henry and Barb Dory. Barb was the oldest and the only one that had any university education. Darlene was the sister of our gang's best fighter, Jim Henry. We were paid $100 a week, which wasn't a lot of money even back then, but enough so I could rent a fashionable townhouse with three other roommates, pay for the gas in my Volkswagen Fastback, and even pay for dinner and a movie with a nice girl on a Saturday night. Our schedule was to check in at 9 in the morning with Lenore at her office donated by the community center, discuss what ideas we had, and then hang out on the streets. We had the whole day to do what we thought was best. No supervision. My friend Brian and I worked together as a team, and soon everyone called us Starsky and Hutch. Yeah, Google it. I was Hutch. Brian looked like Starsky, too. Within a few weeks, we were going gangbusters. We liaised with the housing project managers to dedicate a room to us, which we decorated with black lights, black light posters, a stereo system, a coffee pot, soft drinks, and cookies to create a Friday and Saturday night drop-in center. Then we got the local elementary school to open their gymnasium once a week to run late-night basketball. A couple of volunteers and myself ran the program. We made an arrangement with the Board of Education for the YAP, Youth Action Project, another nonprofit, to set up a trailer in the parking lot of the local high school. They offered walk-in drug counseling 3 hours a day, staffed by former addicts. The girls made an arrangement to open a daycare center at the Jane Finch Mall, staffed by volunteers. In the middle of the mall, they set up a white picket fence to keep the kids in, laid down thick carpets, and stocked with donations of desks, toys, and lots of big pillows. Then I got the Parks and Recreation Department to allow me to run a live music venue I called the Creek Concert Coffee House in one of their event spaces. I set up a stage and sound system and invited local musicians to play and even hired headliner acts. We found a farmer that volunteered to let us bring inner city youth up to the farm for a weekend once a month where they would learn farming, how to drive a tractor, and spend evenings around the campfire. Our team was getting a good reputation, and even a couple of newspapers wrote articles on our work. Then, on a Thursday afternoon, I received a call from Bob Kaplan, the Liberal MP for our riding. For my American friends, a Liberal MP is the equivalent to a Democrat senator. He explained that Pierre Trudeau was campaigning for re-election as Prime Minister of Canada in our riding and would it be okay if he visited my live music night. It turned out that the grant that funded us was part of the Liberal initiative to help communities, and our group was such a shining example that they wanted to showcase us. Of course, I agreed to the visit, and Bob Kaplan said he would call the next Monday to work out the details. We were all young, dumb, and liberal, and so everybody was very excited by this news. Imagine the Prime Minister of Canada wanting to meet our team. What happened next was a total shock and taught me three important lessons. The following Monday, when I arrived at the community center for our morning meeting, I found Lenore sitting on the bench outside, crying. When all the team members had arrived, Lenore told us the bad news. We had been shut down and locked out. The community center that had donated the office space to our team had locked us out. There was no reason given. The team went out to see if our operations had been affected. The girls found out that the Jane Finch Mall management had closed down the daycare center and removed the white picket fence and all the toys. No reason was given. They couldn't even get in for a meeting with the managers, and none of their phone calls were returned. Brian and I went to the elementary school and found out we were locked out as well. There would be no more late-night basketball. No reason was given. Our drop-in room at the housing project had a paper notice on the door saying it had been canceled. We tried to contact the Public Housing Administration to find out what happened, but they would not speak with us or return our calls. No reason was ever given. I went to the space run by the Parks and Recreation where I held the live music events and found another sign on the door saying all events were canceled and the doors were chained and locked. I tried calling my contacts at Parks and Rec, and again, no one answered or returned my calls. They wouldn't even allow me in to retrieve the sound and lighting equipment I had stored there. They stole my equipment. No reason was given. The drug counseling trailer, run by YAP, was gone from the high school. We called the coordinators at Youth Action Project, and they said someone had towed the trailer in the middle of the night, and they don't even know where it was. For the next week, we all worked from home, getting on the phone and calling everyone that we had met with and all the contacts we made, and meeting every morning at the picnic table in the parquet to discuss our progress. I had called the Liberal Party headquarters, the Prime Minister's office, and Bob Kaplan's office 20 times a day for a week and never got through to anyone. I called the newspapers that had done stories on our team, and again, a wall of silence. None of the other team members were able to speak to a single person to find out what happened, either. That Friday, our funding was cut. And so that was it. I never saw or heard from Lenore again. Now this is what's scary. This was long before anyone even imagined the internet, and in one day, someone found out everything we had done and all the people we had worked with and sent out an order to shut it all down. Who was behind it? How did they know all the people and contacts we had worked with? Why did all our contacts immediately obey an order to shut us down? Who has that kind of power? Being leftists, we immediately suspected the conservatives, the right wing, before they coined the term far right wing. They were no doubt envious of the success of a liberal program and had sabotaged our group. But our riding and all the people we were working with were all liberals. There wasn't a single elected conservative within 100 miles of us that could have shut us down. Over the following year, I drifted through a few jobs working as a youth counselor for various community centers and halfway homes, culminating in my summer as out tripper for the Toronto Boys Home. But I had lost all passion for community work. The reason was the people that ran the programs. Lenore was an authentic person, but she was the last one I met. I couldn't help but feel they were all phonies. Even before there was such a thing as political correctness, they all spoke the same way, repeating flowery platitudes they had learned in college that meant nothing but was intended to sound scholarly and professional. I have always had a built-in bullshit alarm, and every time I had to deal with administrative staff, the alarm would go off. I didn't know it then, but I do now. The reason I didn't like these people was because they were socialists. So here are three lessons I learned. First, I learned that a small community of people working together can accomplish more than the entire government of Canada. Our grant was less money than the Liberal Party spent on coffee and donuts in a week, and we still did more than they have ever done to improve the lives of low-income families and street youth. We were only 5 people. 3 of us were still teenagers, and no one had a college degree. You don't need a college degree in sociology or social work to help people. All you have to do is hit the streets and talk to people, listen to their stories, and help find ways to provide for their needs. I still promote the benefits of communities. Even small groups of people working together with minimum funding and no training can easily provide for all their needs, from healthcare and retirement homes to food co-ops, homeschooling, and even banking. The second lesson I learned is never do a good job. This has been a hard lesson for me, and I have had to learn it many times. First, your co-workers will hate you and will conspire to get rid of you because doing a good job makes them look bad. And your managers will also hate you because doing a good job means you might become a threat to their positions. Although we never received any answers to why we were shut down, I realize now that this was the reason. Imagine dozens of college graduates with fancy degrees and fancy job titles like community resource officer and social integration liaison, working for the government with huge budgets, never actually doing a damn thing. And here comes a handful of former street gang members still in their teens and doing more in a couple of months than they ever did in their decades-long career. No wonder they got rid of us. The third lesson I learned is that liberals, Democrats, socialists, and communists are the worst hypocrites in the world. They sit in their plush offices with sanctimonious and condescending attitudes, hiding behind the false facade of moral superiority. But in reality, all they care about are their jobs, their paid vacations, their perks, their pensions, doing as little work as possible, and power. I don't know if the conservatives are any better, because after I left the left, I became apolitical, and I never voted again. I follow truth and virtue. I have no need for ideology. Finally, this was a black pill on how government works. Every time you see a politician at some podium promising to allocate and spend so many millions on Aboriginal nations or Black Lives Matter or climate change or homelessness or drug addiction or any of the dozen social ills government is supposed to address, know that out of all those millions and billions of dollars, only pennies on the dollar, if that, actually goes to the people and communities they are meant for. 100% of the money is siphoned off into dozens of NGOs, nonprofits, charities, and private companies. These are all run and operated by party insiders, sycophants, the spouses of lobbyists, and assorted parasites. First, they all pay themselves a handsome salary. Then they hire their friends and relatives and pay them lavish salaries. Then they embezzle what's left and give a healthy kickback to the politicians that passed the bill and handed out the money. In government and politics, this massive fraud, corruption, and graft is called business as usual. A case in point is one of the many scandals involving Canada's current psychopath in power, Justin Trudeau, the alleged son of the psychopathic prime minister that was supposed to visit me 42 years ago, Pierre Trudeau. Justin gave a charity, We, $43.5 million of taxpayers' money. And lo and behold, within days, Justin, his wife, his brother, and even his mentally unstable mother were being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars from this charity for their alleged services. Bear in mind, these people are all multimillionaires. They don't need the money, but they are still happy to rob working-class Canadians of their earnings. Do you see how it works? This is just business as usual. Now, all these phony charities and nonprofits follow one prime directive. Under no circumstances do anything productive. You see, if any actually achieved any of the goals they were being paid handsomely to accomplish, then there would be no further need of them, and they would all soon be out of a job. This system not only incentivizes corruption, but it incentivizes failure. This is why government never, ever does any good. Why it cannot make anything better. Why it cannot create jobs, protect the border, stop crime, or keep you safe. Government is a cancer on society. All it does is suck up resources and spread disease and death. And, like all cancers, it will eventually kill its host. Us. You, me, your family, your kids, your friends, we will all eventually die from our own governments. This is why I became an anarchist in the classical sense of the word. I know the people in power, and they are the least qualified psychopaths, sex perverts, and criminals in the world to be dictating how I should live my life. And so that is the true story of my introduction to community organizing. But that's not all. I have never ceased being inspired by what a handful of people working together can accomplish. I have gone on to work with communities through my work with St. John Ambulance, with artists' co-ops, and my own efforts to create communities. But never will I have anything to do with government.